This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Michael Wanmacher, and it is so much fun to have a chance to talk with you.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, for sure. It's been a fantastic year for you. You've had two amazing film scores, Voice from the Stone and Underworld Blood Wars. But I thought we could go back a couple of years and talk about the cues you wrote for Bloodborne.
Sure. I'd love to.
Well, it's really interesting because Western composers don't often have a chance to work on games by Japanese developers. And Bloodborne is kind of a case in point. It's from Software. And I'm really curious right off the bat how you got to be part of this amazing project.
The people at Sony I've known for a while, the people at PlayStation, the music department in particular, it was, I think, to my benefit that there was a bit of a logjam scheduling-wise towards the end of the game, and they just needed to get it done. And actually, you know, a number of composers worked on the game, and we all did big chunks of it. And it was just a matter of, okay, we're getting really close to having to go gold on this thing, and we got to get it done. So I was just in a place schedule-wise where I was free. And they called up and asked if I was available. I said, oh, yeah, I would love to work on this.
Wow. Were you familiar with the Dark Souls games? You know, from
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The frustration level 10. But for some reason, we're all gluttons for punishment, the people who play those games. But it's, I don't know, you just somehow want to keep going and see what happens.
Yeah, and they work so hard, the developers, with giving even the bosses a real, in some cases, a really heartbreaking backstory so that they're almost sympathetic characters in a way, which is really interesting. And I think it must have given you some interesting ideas on directions to take for the bosses that you ended up scoring the battles for.
The story for each of them, you're right, was really, really well laid out. And the developers wanted a very particular approach for each one that highlighted sort of, how would I say it? The arc of the character in terms of, well, where they ended up, I guess.
Yeah.
Mentally, especially in the case of someone like Mikolash, where it was a character who had just over time gone nuts, was completely crazed individual. And because of that, that was reflected in the music and how chromatic it was. And it was constantly moving up and down and rolling. And it was this manic sort of piano that was carrying the whole thing along with the strings following along what the piano was doing, but it was these massive runs across the keyboard and chromatic movements that were, it just made it sound completely delirious and nutty and insane, and that was the idea.
Yeah, and that one in particular, that's such a scary battle because you have to go looking for him. It's not like some of the other battles where they're in, you know, a dungeon. You have to, like, chase him down. And then, yeah, the piano, it's like Liberace's crazy brother.
Exactly. That name came up a few times. It was kind of like, think of Liberace just kind of losing it. And that was, I remember having that conversation, and it grew from there into what it became.
Thank you. the other cue that I wanted to talk with you about is The Witch of Hemwick, because again, you know, there's something when she first sort of appears, she doesn't look that tough. I mean, she's kind of bent over and withered. But again, you've got that really haunting solo violin, and things just really escalate. And so I guess, you know, as a place to start, how did you end up with working on the bosses that you did do the music for?
In a way, it was sort of luck of the draw. They were, and it was also the people I know at Sony who knew my music felt that these were characters that I would be well suited to do the music for, because I've done a fair amount of really kind of aleatoric, really hellish, crazy music. So it, in terms of nailing the tone of the music, I was pretty comfortable with that. The Witch was tough because, like you were saying, she doesn't appear like a really formidable opponent, but like any type of character that has control over the supernatural, she always has tricks up her sleeve. So as the fight progresses, suddenly it gets bigger. There's more enemies involved, and all of a sudden she's throwing stuff at you that, hey, where did that come from? And it keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the music had to kind of relate to the battle as it escalated.
Yeah, and that must have been an interesting challenge too, because the boss battles do have a kind of plan to them, the way that they escalate. And really, you know, the only sort of uncertainty is how long it's going to take the player to die, which in my case isn't long at all, or, you know, how long it's going to take the boss to be killed. And so in that sense, is it more like scoring to a film?
Games are tough. I've tried over time to come up with the perfect answer to this sort of question, because the differences are really obvious between doing video games and film. And I think it boils down to two things. It's that games are in an environment that's extremely dynamic, if you're playing in the levels, that is. Not for the cutscenes, but in the actual game itself. It's not a linear experience like a film or a television show, where you see a finished product just once from beginning to end, and all the parts are engineered so that you see it the same way every single time from beginning to end. The game is completely dynamic, especially if you're in something like an RPG or an exploration game, where you may be in a level or an area of the game for hours and hours and hours and hours. The music has to hit all the dynamic points in that part of the game that might be going on. And sometimes where the music might be really pumping, the game may actually be kind of still. And or the opposite, there may not be a lot going on and the music may be just really, you know, going along. And it's something that you have to take into consideration, especially because of the repetitive nature of the music. Most video game music is done in loops. And the loops can range anywhere from 30 seconds to, and I've seen some RPGs that go as long as 8 or 9 minutes. But eventually, in a game that takes a lot of time in a level like Bloodborne to get to the end of a boss fight, you're going to keep hearing the same thing over and over and over. There's no way to avoid that. And taking that into account, you have to write the music so that it can follow the intensity of the battle, but at the same time not drive the player nuts, because they're going to be hearing it over and over. And I think the biggest thing to take into consideration as a composer is the melodic content of the music, not necessarily the rhythmic, but the parts of it that are melody-wise most memorable. If you have, I mean, think about if you were playing a Star Wars game and you're hearing the theme from Star Wars over and over and over and over and over, it would drive you absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
But if you take the melody parts out and leave that kind of jamming underscore that's going on carrying the melody, that actually works better as game music. So it's sort of a little bit of thinking about the big picture in terms of vibe and style that work for the game, but then stripping it down to the elements that will support the gameplay without getting in the way of it. That's the real trick of video game music.
The other challenge that you have, especially with music for the boss fights, is you want to give the player a sense that this is a real badass boss who's not going to cut you any breaks at all. And yet you don't want the player to kind of lose hope. So you've got to balance those two things too.
Yeah, I remember composing those pieces of music. They were done in three acts specifically because the fights moved in three acts. So there were points in the music where if you listen to the track itself on the soundtrack, you can hear where it picks up. And that was programmed in the game engine, so that when you finish the kind of the first chapter of the battle, then the AI of the game would move to the second part of the music to escalate everything. And it would sort of hang there. And then when you hit the third part, it would move the music to the third part of the track where it was really pumping. And that helped escalate the music along with the sound and the visuals all kind of simultaneously. But still, it's tricky because you might be in one part of a battle. You may finish one part really quickly and then be in another part of a battle for a really long time and just have to do it over and over. But it was the same thing where having to take into account that the intensity of the fight was going up, but also not put too many elements in the music that the player would want to turn the music off. It's such a fine line to walk, and that's for every game.
Yeah, I bet. Well, as you're approaching the music for boss battles, or I guess really anything, but the battles in particular, do you approach them with the idea of like the whole musical arc, or do you break the music up into acts, kind of in your own mind? It's just a way to sort of plan things out.
I think most of the time, I'm sure I've deviated a couple times, but most of the time I write the biggest iteration of the music, the most stuff, the most energy, the most going on. I start with that and then strip away so that the transitions between what the smallest representation of the music is and what the biggest is they're seamless. They all sound like they're of one piece. But when I strip, say, elements away from the climactic part of the battle to do the front end, there may be a few sounds or instrumental elements that are just particular to that front part of the battle, but it all spawns from the same pool of stuff.
Wow, that is so cool because then you know where you're going.
Yeah.
That's a really cool way to work. Because otherwise, yeah, you could end up with something sounding completely different at the end than what you really intended. Wow.
Yeah, for me, boss battles, the key for me personally as a composer is getting the rhythmic movement of it correct. Is what is it? Is it a certain musical meter? Is it a sound? Is it accents on certain beats? And tempo is super, super important, but experimenting with a lot of different combinations of those things until the chug of the battle feels right. And then once that bedrock is there, then start building all the other stuff on top of it.
when you were brought into the project, you mentioned that they were kind of in the home stretch. So did you have a lot of builds of the game that you could look at to kind of get ideas?
No, not really. I think I was actually playing with only in the entire time I was in the process was only two different builds of the game. It was close to the end and we were moving really fast. Most of that music was, I think all of it that I did was composed in like less than a week.
Wow.
It was really fast. But, and then we went straight to London and recorded it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you were in on the recording sessions at Air Studios and Abbey Road, because those sound, they just look amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. I wasn't able to go there because of the timeline. I had to watch it over Skype and listen over Source Connect. But I was able to see the band, you know, the orchestra playing and the choir and everything and watch it all come together. It was amazing. I wish I could have gone. It just wasn't any time.
Yeah, I bet. Well, were you able to offer feedback on your tracks, or was that pretty much just in the hands of the music producers at that point?
Yeah, they were very open to taking feedback. It was really, honestly, the orchestration and everything was really nailed down going out there. So in terms of performance coming back at me, those musicians are so good. They were pretty much playing it down the way it was intended to go. And all the changes I was making were just little dynamic tweaks or hit this beat a little bit harder, or can the cellos play a little bit louder, or vocally can you change this vowel or syllable to this vowel or syllable, little tiny things, but they would respond very quickly. It didn't take very many takes to nail any one of those tracks.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, so many composers that I've talked with, they say that the musicians that they bring in for Air and Abbey Road are just, it's like they, it's what they live and breathe. And so it's so much fun to work with them because they are so good.
Yeah, they're all world class. A big thing too is they all have great instruments. And most people don't think about that, but in LA and in London, a big reason why people prefer to go there is because not only are the players world class, but they have really great instruments too. And that makes a big difference, especially with brass and how they speak and tonality, things like that. It's just always a great experience, because even after being involved with music pretty much, you know, my entire life, it still blows me away that someone can sit down having never heard or seen the music and the downbeat happens and they just play it. And it sounds awesome. And I mean, I can't do that. I'm not that type of musician, but it blows my mind. And I know everybody who experiences it for the first time just sort of sits there mouth agape wondering how are people able to do this, especially as a huge orchestra? But they do, day after day after day. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. And I talked with a violinist who plays with the Nashville Scoring Orchestra, and she just doesn't treat it like it's any special gift at all. It's just what she does. It's amazing.
It's like, oh, I'll sit down and read a book and play my instrument.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in the other room going, man, awesome.
I know. I mean, I was a piano major in college, and I was absolutely hopeless at sight reading. So I just really admire anybody who can do it. So.
Yeah, especially those crack sight readers who just, it doesn't matter what you throw at them. They just, okay, no problem.
Yeah, it's amazing. And we've touched a little bit on the orchestration for your cues for Bloodborne, and that was nailed down before you even were part of the project. And so I'm wondering how that affected, you know, your approach to the music. What did it make it easier in a way because the palette was like already defined?
Yes, that made it a lot easier going in. There wasn't a lot of exploration in terms of what sounds would be cool or how is this game going to sound. At that point, the developers were very clear about the types of instrumentation they wanted and the approach they were trying to sell for any particular boss. And that made it much, much easier. Like knowing that you have a sizable choir at your disposal going in makes it a lot easier to write for voices, because you know you have the resources there if you want to write big arrangements. Like the vocal weight is going to be there. It's not something that you come up with at the last second and go, oh, I think I'll use a choir. And it changes the fabric of the music entirely. I knew that going in, so it made it easy to put together a template and just start cranking.
Wow, yeah, I bet. Well, what kind of, I'm just curious about what you do to kind of get yourself in the mood to write this really horrifying music just in the first place.
Look at the game for sure. Spend time with it. And I don't know, for me, I'm a genre kid and a genre adult, so falling into that mental space for me is pretty easy, 'cause it represents the type of material that I like to watch in movies and read in books. I love, dark fantasy and sci-fi and horror, and it's relatively easy for me to get into that headspace. But I played the game just so I could get a feel for the visual flavor of it. The stuff that comes from software has a real distinct visual approach. It's like beautiful and elegant, but horrifying at the same time. And that definitely informed the music. There's an elegance to the music. There's a real sense of what most people would call quote unquote classical approach to it. That was definitely informed by the visual information in the game.
And just, to speak to that, your cue for The Witch of Hemwick has that beautiful violin line that's just, right out of any kind of classical piece. So were there any moments when you felt like it was like too much?
No, with that kind of orchestra, it was a lot of strings, a lot of voices, and a little bit of low brass. When I was writing with that sort of template, it was just really easy to go wherever my brain wanted to go. There was no point where it was too big, because the battles got they get so epic and so out of control that the visual stuff could support however big the music wanted to be. So in that case, there was just no, I didn't feel limited in that sense, I guess is what I was trying to say.
Oh, that makes total sense. And you're right, because those battles, especially the way I play them, they last a long time.
Yeah,
And
no, I know, I feel you.
I've talked with a few other composers who say that they really love writing music for horror projects, whether it's film or TV or games. And what one of the things that they really love about it is the freedom that they have to experiment with some like really out there sounds. And I was just curious, what do you enjoy about it?
Very much the same thing. It's the one genre where you can combine really traditional scoring methodology with the craziest thing you can possibly think of, just, using found objects, using instruments in ways they were totally not designed for, building your own instruments, using sounds from the environment, lots of electronic manipulation. All of that goes in the pot for horror. There is no one best way to do it. So you can either do it just using an orchestra, or you can use it just using electronics, or you can just buy a piano and tear it to pieces and record the whole thing, put it in reverb, and somehow it comes out as a horror score. Now, that sort of freedom is great, because it helps expand your mind as an artist. And I don't know. I guess it's just fun.
It sounds like a blast.
Is. I mean, I have a literally 10 feet away from me, I have a piano that was a victim of a horror score, and it's just completely torn to bits. But I still keep it because I can make lots of incredibly weird noises on it, but nothing that sounds like a piano.
Oh, that's so cool, though. And it must be fun to work with a studio or a film production company, a director who just like give you free rein, too.
Yeah, I always find that horror directors are very quick to try something new. They want something that's very unique to their film and something very custom. And that presents a whole bunch of really interesting problems to solve throughout the entire process, where that one thing that the composer comes up with that might start out as a novelty in the score, and suddenly, as the score develops, it becomes the bedrock of the score. That's a really cool part of that process.
Yeah, I bet. Well, wow, Michael, it's been so much fun to talk with you and just look under the hood for your process, for your cues for Bloodborne, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk about it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. I love talking about it. It's part of the deal is, you know, the nuts and bolts part of scoring is something that not a lot of people get to hear about very often. And for us as composers, that's kind of the most fun part of the process.
It's been a fun journey for me too to talk to you and the other composers, because as a player, you know, you get the finished project and you don't get to hear about what went into it to make it the way it is. So it's been fascinating for me.
Cool.
Yeah. So great. Thanks again.
Oh, you're welcome.